Welcome, everyone, to the Edge of Wonder radio show on this beautiful spring Sunday. My name is Ambe Ray, and I'm here with my beautiful husband, Orion, to explore with you, our beautiful listeners, the vast and ever-unfolding terrain of conscious evolution. Today, we have someone very, very special as a guest, the author of the Mayan Oracle and the 13 Moon Oracle, Ariel Stillsbury, and in this moment, who would like to be referred to as the Mystic Mumbler. Although I would say she's a far cry from a mumble, my experience is she's an incredible wealth of archival wisdom, experiential consciousness, and holds one of the most profound spaces for resonant interactivation of the god and goddess. It's a real pleasure and an honor to introduce Ariel Stillsbury and as our special guest. So thanks, Ariel, for joining us today.
Welcome, Ariel.
Thank you. I'm here.
You're here. You
yeah.
are so
yeah,
here.
I think that's the best thing we can ever say is I'm here now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, What are you working on now? I'm reading through your 13 Moon Oracle, your book. Ambe has another one of your books as well here in our library, and your cards. I know you teach workshops. I can't imagine. What are you up to these days?
Well, you're going to start with the most arcane first, I can see.
Yeah, just kind of like a hello. You're in California, right?
Yeah, I'm in California, and my present area of extreme passionate interest is creation of prototypes of a glass bead game, which is a Hermann Hesse term that he coined in the book Magister Ludi, the glass bead game. And so that's my current project in consciousness.
Can you give us a little glimpse into what the glass bead game is and about?
In a nutshell, most all games lead us to recapitulate the known. And the intention of the glass bead game is to move us further into the mysterium, into the mystery, further into the unknown, further into the areas in consciousness that we have never thought of or never known, and revel in that instead of in the current model of intellectualism where here in Western culture, at least, where everyone says the right answer, knows the right way, and that sort of thing, which is recapitulating the known.
Right.
Beautiful. I know you're a lover of novelty and novel combinations. I've learned so much about putting unlikely combinations together and reveling in the delight of that.
Absolutely. That is what I love best. You know, the Cheshire Cat just popping in and popping back out again and creating novel combinations in between the popping in and popping out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's what actually it's interesting you say that because this, from the 13 Moon Oracle, I do 13 Moon ordinations. And what I just did, the ordination for the Muse yesterday, which is absolutely about creating novelty, but that is the whole point of the Muse. So you're right on schedule, telepathically speaking.
Where would you say this kind of these novel sparks arise from in consciousness? What's the spark behind the spark or the impetus?
God, I guess, at the very base of everything is we're all impulsed through the divine spark of desiring to express the divine in a new way. The divine wants novelty. I mean, we should, you know, basically stop boring God.
Mm.
You know, create novelty. Create menu items on our holographic movies that are more interesting than those that most of our lives entail, which is going over and over and over the same ground.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So I mostly, try to inspire the divine by novel thoughts, novel creative energies and efforts, output, always trying to move into areas that I don't know anything about, and that I can enter into a, you know, a more novel state, because I believe that we are, archetypally speaking, food for the divine. That our life stream is food for the divine, and energetically speaking, and that as we are more novel, we make more interesting meals. But, you know, just to put it in a simple sort of metaphor.
Novelty, for me, has a feeling of being on our evolutionary edge. It really coincides with we're becoming what we don't know necessarily what we're becoming, but we're willing to be in that discovery in every moment.
Absolutely. That's I look at it, and that's what it's training for. I mean, I change my silverware drawer all the time, and I change everything in my reality so that I don't get accustomed to having things be always the same way. That's a very prosaic metaphor, but, you know, it's just the way our lives are, that we're so routinized that we don't, you know, really seek out novel experiences. And it's those experiences that are really going to prepare us for the territory of the unknown, that if anyone's awake, they're noticing that we're in the unknown. Right now.
Yeah, we sure are.
Yeah.
You know, I love the way you changed the silverware. I mean, just that example alone is something great to remember. I think I'll remember that a long time as an example on how to switch up my life a little bit, you know, walk home a different way, or just creating a novel experience in that way. And then something that I do, because that's important, just a little, creating new ritual in life, a new setting, even within the same house or the same car that we drive in. And then the other thing is, it may look the same, maybe I'm brushing my teeth the same way, but I'm feeling different about the way I'm brushing my teeth, and that is a novel, something that's very internal. It may look exactly the same outside, and I think that's another way. It's the same thing, really.
It's just
an approach, and then, it's the same way. It's the same thing, really.
Mm-hmm. Yep, however we bring the novel into our lives on all levels of the metaphor, all the better, because we don't, Einstein was very, very pointed about this, you know, that you cannot solve a problem at the level it was created.
Mm-hmm.
It requires novelty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, solve the problems we're facing right now. And so more than anything else, it is requiring our stepping into the more aha moments in our lives where we are creating from novelty rather than recapitulating the known.
Yeah, and I hear you saying that's something that can be exercised and trained or continue to become more comfortable with, and in that flow of possibility and novelty.
Yeah, and the ground for that is? Play.
Life.
Because when we're playing, we're suspending our need to control, and our need to control and this obsessive need to control everything, you know, is basically trying to avoid the novel, you know, because it's too scary to think about something unpredictable happening to us.
Yeah.
You know, so basically it's super important to play.
Absolutely.
To spend more time. Yeah, and that allows for the aha experiences to come in when our mind isn't trying to control everything.
So in essence, I'm also hearing a shift in a paradigm from living in what's known into living in what's possible that enlivens life and moves life forward in every moment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Questioning reality, questioning our belief systems and the way that they're creating the outpicturing of our lives, questioning everything in our known reality and shifting those things that are just not fun and not productive in that way, you know, of creating novelty.
You use archetypes a lot, for example, in the 13 Moon Oracle and the Mayan Oracle. How are archetypes serving us along in creating new novel and experiences of our divine?
Oh, that's a great question. Most people have a basic familiarity with what archetypes are, but Jung defines them as form constants that exist in and define a field of consciousness that is beyond time and space. The simple definition that I tend to look at is the larger-than-life containers, the mythic containers of being, like the magician, the fool, the Tarot archetypes, for example, are most familiar to people. But larger than life containers, they're beyond our little small encapsulated egos. They are the things that move us as we move into our archetypal expression into larger containers of self beyond the ego. Did that help?
Absolutely.
I don't know whether that hit it or not, but
I'm so curious. You know, I asked this question myself, being someone who, you know, is residing in the United States of America and having a sense of how things are unfolding politically, for example, since that's at the forefront of a lot of what's happening in the world. And could you put an archetype on the collective of the United States of America as far as a learning, initiatory learning experience?
The creator-destroyer.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Archetype. That we have the total opportunity to create a new reality and not be the warmongering destroyers, that archetype can go either way. It's raw power, and America has it. And
mm-hmm.
whether it goes into the process, that power goes into creation or destruction, that's the larger archetype that it's playing out. And that's actually the, you know, critical choice point that we're facing as, you know, a human tribe, and America having such a big part in that cosmic play that's unfolding. That's part of it.
So if we really wanted to affect the collective, for example, of the United States, we could really take on that creator-destroyer within our own individual lives and work to shift the part of ourselves into positive creation.
Exactly. You know, focusing on the creative process and allowing the divine to impulse you with what it is that the divine wants to create through you, what you want to create from your divine self to offer to the whole that is unfolding, to the, as I said, cosmic play that's unfolding, rather than just sitting by and, you know, falling into the fear and saying, oh, my God, it's going, you know, it's going to hell, you know. I mean, that's going to do absolutely nothing to focus on the destroyer aspect and the fear aspect, but rather to focus on our creations.
Could you describe maybe a mature version, an evolved version of the destroyer part of the creator destroyer? How would that work in say a life where there's respect for all? Where would that come into play? Where the destroyer still has...
You know, it comes into play naturally in life, in the cyclical nature of reality, you know, of the death cycle and fall and, you know, all those kinds of things are the natural way that that archetype plays out, that is, you know, it's destructive in the sense of it's part of the natural unfoldment rather than our creating unnecessary destruction.
And
as far as an elevated version of that reality, or I'm not quite sure what you're asking.
I suppose, I saw in your book, you see the destroyer as the one to release as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
I thought that was really interesting. You know, it placed release has incredible value as we evolve, because we're releasing perhaps guilt or shame that's been denied, and we're moving on to a new day.
Exactly. That's the positive, more elevated version of it, basically, is that it's about disidentifying with the ego.
Okay.
Kali Ma is the female archetype that is just like, you always see her pictured standing, you know, on top of her lover with his head cut off. I mean, it's just really gory stuff, and everybody goes, oh, turn the page, that's horrible. But what it represents is the death of the ego. It represents the disidentification with the whole egoic structure and process that we're being called to do in preparation, this release process in preparation for the frequency range that I feel we're moving into and will require that. So, yes, there's a definite productive aspect to the destroyer.
Mm-hmm.
looked at as the releaser, the liberator of our illusions.
Thank you.
These energies, whether they're archetypical, we can call them archetypical, alchemical, we're definitely being prepared and molted, so to speak, into something new and novel and evolutionary. And, you know, in a lot of the cosmology that we've had our attention on recently, we're likening it to a birth process of some kind. And I know you speak about this a lot in your offerings, that we're birthing. We are in an individual and collective birth canal. I'd love you to just share a little bit about your sentiments about this birth process.
Well, of course, I take a humorous take on virtually everything, but in the 13 Moon Oracle, the final phase, the alchemical phase, goes through the birth process as if you were a stewardess on the, what is it called, Alchemistica Airlines or whatever, and looks at it humorously, which I tend to look at everything through that lens. But basically the birth process that's been instigated, the Maya were predicting many, many centuries ago that we're headed into a process of, like you said, personal and collective birth that is requiring it's like being squeezed through an incredibly tight, just like a snake shedding its skin, that we've outgrown who we are as we've evolved for many, many lifetimes and through many different expressions. And we're coming to what the Mayas look at as a graduation party. You know, we've been through so much spiritual evolution, and now we're shedding the too tight skin of these lives that have contained us and defined us in a limited game, and moving into a much more expansive game. And we're going through the cosmic portal that it's getting tighter and tighter and tighter. And those people who do not have, who want to try and control and do not have a sense of humor and a willingness to be extremely fluid and mentally and consciously very fluid, will be very taxed and becoming more and more so, because the more the ego tries to hold on and control in this birth process, the more uncomfortable it's going to become. So Mayas say we're headed toward the date of around 2012, and of course there are many brouhahas over the exact date, and who cares, because we're in a cosmic blink, whatever it is, from now until 2012. Sometime in that time, in the twinkling of an eye, we will birth ourselves into a totally different frequency range. And I have known this since I was 8 years old, and I've been living that and writing it ever since I can remember, trying to prepare people for exactly the time we're in right now. The Mayan Oracle was written as a roadmap for this navigation, and now the 13 Moon Oracle is like a fine-tuning of that for this specific time from now till 2012 for preparation. How's that?
Experiencing both the Mayan Oracle and the 13 Moon Oracle, it is truly a map of multidimensional consciousness and assists one through the embodiment and the anchoring to the most subtle, sublime points of consciousness. It's just really fantastic contribution. So thank you for bringing those through. So grateful. We're so grateful for those works.
Oh, it was a joy. I like the when I wrote the Mayan Oracle, it was working with non-terrestrial archetypes, with galactic archetypes of consciousness, because I consider myself to be a Maya, a very cleverly disguised Maya as a blonde, but still a Maya. And you know, and then that, as far as I was concerned, was an opportunity to look at, through a very expansive lens of consciousness, look at consciousness through that. Then, when I was really impulsed to create the 13 Moon Oracle, which is the 13 faces of the divine feminine, I said, now, wait a minute. You want me to go backwards and work with feminine archetypes after I'm working with galactic archetypes? What's up with that? And finally, it became really clear that unless we all, as human beings, embody the divine feminine, we're finished on the planet. It's done. you know, if we keep living out the totally lopsided left-brained male aspect of ourselves, and I'm not talking about men, I'm talking about the male aspect of all beings, if we keep playing that out solely without any balance in the feminine, this planet is finished. And so the divine feminine said to me, okay, let's balance this out by looking at all aspects of consciousness through the feminine lens. So people, men ask me, well, I can't relate to this stuff. This is 13 female archetypes. And I say, look, you've got a feminine being inside you too. And this is only looking at consciousness through the feminine lens. And consciousness is obviously not male or female. It's completely neutral.
Right, right.
So, yeah, they both, I think, both are serving in this birth process. I appreciate your appreciating them. I'm glad I lived this long to be able to share them with the beings who are prepared for this frequency of information.
If you meet Arielle, and hopefully some of our listeners will have that opportunity, you'll have an experience of an eternal being. I know that from having that privilege of knowing you, Arielle. You are so eternal. Sounds like Ryan has a good question.
Yeah, I do. Well, you know, for me, up to this point, to really feel into the feminine aspect of my beingness, what mm-hmm. I've come up with is my feeling side, my feeling approach or lens of life.
Mm-hmm.
How do I feel about this?
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of the attribute. And I would also, but I would also attribute that to my masculine side too. So it's hard for me to really ever separate entirely masculine and feminine energy. And I would, through your endeavors, have you ever been able to say, okay, this is purely a feminine energy, and had a pure sort of separate, or have you found that it's always been in some way combined with masculine, or you know, in order to make something of wholeness?
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's
a good way of looking at it. You know, in other words, in unity consciousness, there's not even a need for that that compartmentalization, or whatever you want to call it, of male and female in separate containers. Yet as our consciousness evolves, it's like in alchemy when it says, there's an alchemical principle that says salve et coagula, which is a thing cannot be adequately joined until it has been adequately separated.
Mm-hmm.
So to investigate those aspects that seem different, that have seemed to have different attributes, and to look at them both through the lens of one or the other, then eventually that comes into androgyny. But you can't just start at androgyny. You have to be willing to look through those lenses. And yes, it may seem arbitrary, you know, to divide them up that way. Although the brain itself, the left and the right hemispheres are connected with the tiniest corpus callosum. I mean, it's a very tiny thing. And when you read brain research and so forth, you see that the function of the left brain is genuinely very different than the function of the right brain.
Right.
And I look at the left brain as the male and the right brain as a female, as many brain scientists do, because the right brain is very spatial, feeling-oriented. The left brain is very linear and analogical in terms of its functioning. It's just more of a hard-wiring issue at that level.
Right, right.
In the works that I do in the Taoist healing system, it's so much about differentiation to become whole.
Mm-hmm.
Each and every part, for example, of the internal organs, the liver absolutely wants to be acknowledged, felt, and appreciated wholeheartedly as the liver to do its work in conjunction with all the other internal organs, the gallbladder, the intestine. It's such a beautiful process. I personally work on doing abdominal massage, differentiating what people have experienced in their own belly as a full merge. This is my belly.
Uh-huh.
But there's actually all these different parts that really appreciate the differentiation, and I hear a little of that in what you're saying.
Yeah, definitely. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. It sounds like you slipped between the hole and the world.
We did. Boy, did we have an adventure. It seemed like we were gone for a moment, but yeah.
Well, that's the way it is, you know, in no time, so it's okay.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
So, when you were talking about the left and the right brain and the tiny little space that joins them in between, I'm wondering if that's the place where, through some work that we've been up to, where is the seat of consciousness. It's a one-cell ridge.
Uh-huh.
That's where the seat of consciousness is.
Yeah, what they call the blue pearl. Yeah.
It could be. That's not the term that we've been using, but, yeah, that could be it, yeah. And very interesting. What I wanted to bring out and kind of put out there and see what everyone has to, you know, feel about is I see that we're working simultaneously with the sort of analysis and synthesis.
Uh-huh.
So we have a picture of the whole in some way. We have, that's my feeling, is that we have the whole picture somewhere. We have that in our, you know, makeup, in our blueprint,
uh-huh,
as a reference. And we also have all the sort of pieces laid out before us as well, the masculine and the feminine, or all the aspects of frequency in our universe, and so we can create whatever we want, and possibly what we could create is this project of getting through that tiny hole that might
uh-huh.
be the birth itself, you know, to get through that tiny birth canal of
mm-hmm.
letting go of the skin of the ego. I just wanted to, I mean, I'm just kind of putting together some pieces of our conversation, and
mm-hmm.
I would love to hear what you both have to think about that.
Well,
if anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, if you understand holographic theory, a hologram, if you break any piece of the hologram, it will recapitulate itself in the whole image, will recapitulate itself in the smallest piece.
Right.
So we're hardwired that way. There's no way to lose the whole because we always are in it, no matter what our perceptual level is to what we how separate we may feel. You know,
yep.
We're still interconnected with the whole. So, yeah, it's a seminal technology to understand how holograms work, to really understand what it is that we're looking at now as our hologram is shifting in its makeup. I mean, we live in a virtual reality. That's really unnerving to most people to really grok that. But we live in a very sophisticated virtual reality, and quantum physics is very much purveying this now as a model of reality that has a lot of weight to it, that people are starting to agree that, in fact, you know, we're in a very sophisticated movie here.
It took a few years for people to catch on that the Earth was not flat as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it may take a while, but sooner or later. And that's, you know, that's bound to change your reality base in the sense just that one changing reality construct from quantum physics is really pivotal in shifting, for example, you're having a sense of humor about life and not taking spirituality so bloody seriously. You know,
right.
Recognizing that everything's really quite funny, and that as you focus on your life in a playful and joyful way, that the hologram, it responds to that, and your whole life is so much easier than, you know, than focusing on having your lens focused on all the negativity and all the fear. I mean, you know, I don't keep my head in the sand, but I don't take a newspaper. I don't watch the television because I don't want to put those elements in my holographic movie.
Yeah.
I don't want to write that in my mythic script. I don't want mm-hmm. that fear-based thinking to get into my nervous system and in myself because I don't believe in it. It's not real for me, and consequently, since it's not, I live in quite an amazing reality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's very hard for people to grok. They just, you know, my mother, for example, you know, she just says, you can't, do you know who's president right now? That's what she usually asks me. But, and I actually do right now, but sometimes I don't. So, anyway, yeah,
well,
it's just a different way of holding reality.
If we're frequency-based beings and we're being encouraged to sustain and hold the highest frequency we can so that we can, in fact, be the embodiments of our highest frequency, whatever we ingest, in some way we're going to have to project out. We're going to have to digest, and then it will be projected out. So part of being a self-responsible part of the hologram is to be very responsible for what we take in and what we put out.
Exactly.
Especially perceptions of what we're sensing with all our senses and what we're making up about what we're sensing.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It sounds like as we consciously evolve, putting ourselves on a really clean diet would be really helpful in what we're creating.
Well, especially in the respect that what Christ said was, it is not what you put into your mouth that befouls you, it is what comes out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's like, truly, since we create, we are creator gods with our thought forms and with what we speak. And that's the diet that needs to be cleaned up.
Absolutely.
You know, to really pay attention to what diet you are, you know, ingesting in the fuels that you put in what movies you watch, in what papers you go to, pay attention to. You know, all those are frequencies that really do impact and affect our nervous system and our outpicturing of reality, as you said. So, yeah, you have to pay attention to all levels of the metaphor when you use the word diet, what it is that you take on all levels, and what it is that you put out on all levels.
That's really prompts me to bring up the unconscious and the subconscious mind, and that part of our banquet table,
uh-huh.
And how we look at that, and how we can recapitulate that, things that were swept under the carpet, or, you know, I don't want to ever look at this, and
uh-huh.
things that I absolutely, positively don't want to ever look at, and then they come up. You know,
of course.
I think it's, you know, part of this going through the perforations into and through these contractions to the pure essence. This is all coming up in such a beautiful way, and, you know, with ease and grace, we can just observe this and release this and gain the passion that's really there waiting.
Absolutely. If you react, you have subconscious material that needs to be cleared. Period.
Right.
It's very simple in the hologram of one. In the Hall of Mirrors, if something, quote, makes you react, if you have a reaction, you are in need of clearing some subconscious belief system that undoubtedly went in at 3 or 5 years old that you're still operating out of.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the best feedback system I know. The Hall of Mirrors is the clearest. I mean, our hologram is just rocks. God rocks, you know?
It is amazing. It really
so
is.
So exciting to see how simple and clear this holographic playing field actually is. But so you know exactly where your Velcro is. If you react, you go, oh, wow, I really need to look at that. I reacted just then. And you just go for, you know, down and down and down through the levels of that and clear the belief system in whatever way you do. There are myriad, you know, incredible numbers ways to do that. But that's the tip-off for sure.
So beautiful. You know, we have a common friend, Nassim Harriman, our quantum master physicist, we asked him the question, what's the single most important thing we can do to prepare for this evolutionary birth that we find ourselves embodying or being upon? And he said self-edit and thought edit, to be one's own editor. Scratch that, cancel that, delete that.
Yeah. In other words, we're the creators. And that's what I just said. We are creating the reality with those words that are coming in and out that we need to edit.
Yeah, self-scripting.
Yeah, self-scripting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I would answer to that question, you know, the single most important thing is only love bends light, and therefore only love creates, period.
Beautiful. Say it again for us. I want to take it in.
Only love bends light, and therefore only love creates.
Beautiful.
The truth is that there is only one power, and it is the power of love. And however many evolutionary lifetimes it takes for people to garner that and to grok that, that's their business. But eventually we come to the fact that only love creates. And thus, in the end, love is all that matters. Period. When you die, the first thing you do is start laughing hysterically. You're going, what the hell was I thinking about? Why did I take it all so seriously? You know, when all that really mattered was how I loved, who I loved,
yeah,
what love I shared with others. And so the single most important thing I would say is to love with more profundity.
Mm,
yeah.
So beautiful. And you know what's amazing? I could feel the physics in your voice, in the word. I could feel my own cells rearrange, my own molecules and subatomic molecules just rearrange your words. And that's what's so profound about love. It's certainly just not a feeling or an emotion. It feels, it's a full-on code into our evolution.
Yes, and thus putting us in alignment with the highest possible evolution, because love wants the best for us, you know. So to love puts the message into the nervous system that that is what you truly are about, is the highest possible, most expanded expression of who you are. And it will call that in by, like I said, in the Hall of Mirrors, when, you know, like attracts like. So as you love more, more love comes pouring in. It just keeps working out.
Mm. You said when I spoke to you earlier today, you were feeling most yourself in this archetype of the fairy godmother. And were those the words of the fairy godmother?
Those were. Yeah, I have my pet project is a foundation called Wings, Wands, and Wishes, and I am a fairy godmother. That is my favorite archetypal expression. To drive around in my little pink electric car with bubbles blowing out the back and, you know, fringe on the top and carrying on like a fairy godmother, just bringing more joy into this world. Because while all this fear is happening and all this contraction is happening on Earth, there is nothing more important for me to do than bring more joy and more love out into the world in my expression. When I'm going to the grocery store, when I'm doing anything, I am doing it as, you know, this, what undoubtedly many people would fondly call the mad woman of San Rafael, California. But but I have a great time doing it, and it surprisingly, as I move into my more authentic expression, those people that need to come and resonate with me or learn something from me or share something with me just keep coming toward me. But if I'm hiding out in my culturally normative car, in my culturally normative outfit, how are they going to find me? And it's the same thing with you.
Mm-hmm. I wish you'd take more trips up to Ashland.
Yeah, my little pink electric car won't go on freeways yet, but they're going to come up with it soon.
Wonderful. Yeah, I do remember one of the quintessential moments with you, Arielle. I've had so many profound moments. Was when you we were doing the Mayan Oracle initiations together, and you surprised everyone by coming out one evening as the chicken oracle.
Yes.
You remember? That truly shook me up into a whole new possibility of what's possible in our expressions.
Totally. I mean, the thing is, you know, then that just knocks me off the pedestal as teacher and makes everyone recognize that if I'm willing to be that foolish, that we must all be masters. You know, we're all here in this together, sharing with each other, but no student, no teacher, that we truly are masters together. And so that helps people to drop those, what I consider to be really in the way perceptions that keep us separate in those containers of student, teacher, you know, those rigid containers.
Well, I think that's been the most profound gift of working with the archetypes with you, is that it's up my spectrum of permission to my palette of my life to live in such a greater and more vaster spectrum of possibility. And so I'm really grateful for all the different possibilities that get illuminated in your learning field.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the thing, you know, to just spark each other into remembrance of our vastness and our magnificence and our divinity and our funniness, you know, to help each other remember and to recognize that that higher consciousness is about lightening up, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dalai Lama or anyone that's a really evolved human being has an amazing sense of humor. It's part of the journey.
Mm-hmm.
It's really part of the journey to remember that we are, and having a sense of humor opens us up to the possible. You know, in other words, I'm not just who I thought I was. I can be a chicken oracle. I can be this. I can be that. I can be a fairy godmother. I can be any archetype. I can walk down the street as anything. And that's so freeing for us to recognize our possibility and to play it out in our authentic expression.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the Cheshire Cat? Is that from Alice in Wonderland?
Yes,
where,
but it's my specific animal totem. When people ask me what my animal totem is, I say the Cheshire Cat, of course, because it comes in and out, walks in and out of dimensions and realities, and that is just fine with me. That's why I play around with that.
Oh, like, yeah, totally comfortable just walking through dimensional doorways and perforations.
Yeah, slipping between the hole and the world. That's what he does. He's very good at it.
Yeah, all right. And then I saw it in... this is probably a very detailed and obscure question, and I apologize if it's totally off the cuff. In your introduction in your book, The 13 Moon Oracle, you mention a tendril, and that was such a wonderful image. You know, this tendril kind of reaching into a reality or a possibility, and the tip of the tendril, you know, touching into something new and novel. I just appreciated that so much. Just with one word that you brought through in the introduction, I appreciate it so much. And I don't know if you have a connection to that and a remembrance that you could pull up and how and why you would choose such a word like that.
Well, just because tendrils are so, you know how plants grow, and they just hook on to something else, you know. The little tendril goes out and quietly and gently wraps around something else, so it's dimensional tendrils.
Yeah.
A lot of my writing, the writing that comes through me is holographic. And what I mean by that is that you could really start anywhere and it will have the sense of the whole rather than like a book that you have to read from one end to the other and it has to have this completeness in linear reality. It's not linear, it's holographic. And so you might read two paragraphs and go, oh, my God, the tendrils of dimensions, yeah. And then you go into a meditation about that, and that is the one thing that your high self really wanted you to garner in that moment. And it's living from that place of holographic knowing that it's all whole and that your high self will get you to the information if you'll just play with, you know, play with the materials.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was very fun. I love to write that way. It's holographically. To not make linear sense is so freeing, and there's a higher sense that comes through in holographic writing that is so much more fulfilling to me, at least, and to the many readers who do work with both of these oracles that are holographic. It's satisfying to be freed from the concreteness of linear reality.
Yay!
So anyway, there's hands. It goes on the, there's a warning label that goes on the outside of the 13 Moon Oracle that reads something along the lines of, beware, this is as holographically rich as chocolate souffle, so only take a bite here and there, and until only, you know, read until you're full, or to avoid that overfulfilling, you know, which is what, you know, when something's so holographically rich, you only want to have a little bit or a little piece or a little taste, and then let your spirit soar with that rather than trying to take it all in. When someone says to me, because I've had interviewers call me from various radios and so forth, they say, well, I've read your book. I start laughing heartily because nobody just reads these books.
Yep.
They don't work that way. So anyway,
no.
It's just funny to me. So go ahead.
So I just wanted to give listeners an opportunity to get some information about how to contact you and learn more about what you're up to. So just to put out your website right now, it's www.holographicgoddess.com. Holographicgoddess.com. And did you have a piece you might tantalize us with as far as any writing? A passage to share
you know,
with us?
But I tried to look for some specific little piece, but, you know, maybe I can just ferret something out. But I wanted to mention in respect to holographicgoddess.com that I'm going to be teaching 1 week-long work with the 13 Moon Oracle ordination in February of 2009. So if you go to Holographic Goddess, there should be information about that. And I'm doing less and less teaching. So as I'm getting to be this wily old crone who wants to just live in the forest, so that's my next offering. And let me see if I can ferret out something out of the alchemical phase or something I wanted to just... A short bit is hard to come up with, but let's see. Maybe this is out of the final archetype, the alchemical phase, and it says it's...
Ooh, my favorite.
The pilot comes on to the intercom. If you look out the window on your left, you will recognize that we are through with our gestation, that as a species we have come to term, and the contractions are indeed getting bitingly fierce. A memory aroused in the chaotic purple flames of the thunder beings, Kowak, the winterers, the shatterers, that line the walls of descent through the cosmic birth canal with flaming gold, iconic hieroglyphs of the alchemical transmutation of matter. The critical mass bursting into a new world like a sparkler of spontaneous combustion. The stewardess comes on and, oh, did your travel agent tell you to go to the airline's front service desk and get your boarding pass for gate number 13, paging all parties who wish to go to the Rainbow Gate, gate 13, the frequency phase shifting gate, naturally lessening density and higher frequencies of divine love, naturally, ecstatically, delicately beginning to shudder through us like a jellyfish moving sensuously through water, through human consciousness. And as if you can stop this birth, I mean, let's face it, the fact that you're hearing my voice at this moment is indication enough that you're already in the birth canal, perhaps a bit cramped, disoriented, overwhelmed, but still a coiled snake ready to uncoil to travel on the serpent ropes of Shibalba Bay, the road of awe in the Milky Way that leads to the galactic core to shed the too tight skin that reveals the macro rainbow tunnels that merge with the rainbow snake, now caressing this planet, gently massaging Gaia's swollen belly as she surrenders into the transition phase of birth, preceding the omega point of critical mass needed to go through the small portal of the cosmic yoni that births galaxies. We are, in short, about to be born of changing woman, Waxlahoon. Hear her singing your naming song amidst your sweating pangs of ecstatic birth. So the gig is, here we are on the Starship Ecstasy together, and we're flying Alchemistica Airlines, and we know what the in-flight entertainment is great. We know that it may be a little bit bumpy on the flight, so you get your barf bags out, you do all your homework, you clean up your... all the stuff that you have accrued in the negative ego, and get on with moving into full-on boogie ecstasy. How does that sound?
What a great itinerary.
I'm on board. That's what you could say. I'm on board. I got it first.
That's what I'm holding out for, I'll tell you that. I mean, look, you know, I bought my tickets. I have my popcorn. I'm figuring even though I'm just an old crone, I am going to make it to 2012 to see what the fireworks look like.
I'm right there with you in the front row seat. I'm so grateful for what you continue to articulate and bring through in such a divinely pleasurable and ecstatic format and way. And anyone who hasn't had the opportunity to sit in circle with Ariel, I wholeheartedly recommend the February initiation. It's truly life-altering, life-changing, and you will have big smiles on your face, no doubt, throughout it. So very, very grateful. That's the invitation to come play. That passage is just so juicy. I'm going to be digesting that, I think, for a couple days.
Yeah, it really is. It makes me so excited. The great thing about the 13 Moon Oracle is that I was guided to make journeys out of them, so you can put it on your CD thing and chill out and listen to this and not even have to think or read the words. That makes it even more pleasurable.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So that's
the
package. Yeah, that's fun.
How does all this connect to your passion with sacred theater sacred theater?
Oh, that is my passion. I love sacred theater, and sacred theater to me is the coming together of beings in conscious evolution together to honor the archetypal nature of our beings. And in places like Asklepios in Greece, that the central issue that you would get to go to once in your life in that setting in Asklepios was to be able to witness the archetypal sacred theater that was offered there was life transmuting, life transforming. It's not just, quote, performance. It is archetypal actors that are trained to deliver that high-level frequency that transforms you through ecstasy. That
mm-hmm.
is what I'm up to. I'm working on a piece, a sacred theater piece right now that I hope to get filmed and give people an experience of. I've been doing sacred theater my whole life, but most people have not even heard of what sacred theater is. It's participatory with the audience. They participate in it. It's not just something that's delivered and performed. That's the difference between theater and sacred theater.
Yeah, essentially, I mean, they're engaged frequentially, and it's a whole living library that comes to them that they can experience and be blessed with that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounds wonderful. That's what you are. I mean, you're the fairy godmother of with your wand, blessing through your books, through your now the theater I'm learning, and I'm feeling you so deeply and such appreciation of you, Ariel, and so glad that we got a chance to meet, and I'm looking forward to meeting you in person.
Great.
And I feel blessed by the fairy godmother today.
Well, you all just send this sprinkle out from my wand to everybody. Believe in yourself, believe in your dreams, and remember what the fairy godmother says, no fun, no do. Bye.
Bye, I love you. Oh, thank you, everyone. Tune in with us 2 weeks from today for another extraordinary sojourn on the Edge of Wonder show. And from Orion and I, we're signing off on our magic carpet today and send gratitude and love for all our listeners.
Much joy. Bye now.
Bye now.